EasyDMARC, an email authentication and deliverability platform that helps meet and beat Google and Yahoo's requirements in just a few clicks. Easy implementation, smooth DMARC enforcement, smart monitoring and alerting. Everything you need in one platform with a team of experts ready to assist you at every step of the way. Join 70,000 domains authenticating their emails with us. Act now and ensure your important messages land in the inbox.
So, how much were you guys, like your geographic area, affected by the AT&T thing this week?
Actually, surprisingly, I did not get a whole lot of tickets. I got one person who texted me at like, I don't know, it must have been 7:45 in the morning. Her boss was like freaking out. And because one of the, well, it was a mix of a different bunch of things. Someone on the team is freaking out because they got a WhatsApp from the CEO and they never get WhatsApp from the CEO. And then somewhere along the line, some words got convoluted and someone thought that the CEO's phone got hacked to send the WhatsApp. When like, if we had just waited 5 minutes, the CEO goes, no, I don't have AT&T connectivity. I'm using WhatsApp. But like, she didn't start there. She started with, hey, to the employee. So the employee got really confused and was like, we're being hacked. And I'm like, no one's up this early. It's 7:30.
Well, I mean, to be honest, when my daughter brought me her phone and it said SOS, I jumped to that conclusion as well.
I think a lot of people did. I think a lot of people didn't know what to do. I didn't, other than that one, I honestly didn't get any other tickets about it. We immediately posted. A nice thing about our PSA software is if you log into our support portal, we can put like a big blast announcement like right there. So I immediately just put up a blast being like, AT&T is down. There's nothing we can do about it. Here's how you turn on Wi-Fi calling, which only works if you have Wi-Fi. And if your Wi-Fi isn't being provided by AT&T.
Well, but so we actually tried that on my daughter's phone because she didn't have it turned on.
Yeah.
And you can't turn it on unless you already have cellular internet connection.
Why would you need a cellular internet connection to turn it on?
Because there's an agreement page that comes up.
Oh.
And because you're doing it through the cellular settings.
Yeah.
It doesn't try the Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, because I was getting a bad gateway error. Or maybe it was just the fact that AT&T was down.
Right.
But either way, yeah, we couldn't turn on Wi-Fi calling. I had it on, which means I was fine.
Right.
But hers wasn't.
That's crazy. You know, what's funny about that is because like in the articles that I read, whoever the spokesperson was for AT&T, who must have had a really shitty day, was like, turn on Wi-Fi calling. It's in the article. Like on CNN, on Apple News, whatever, it all said turn on Wi-Fi calling. I was talking to somebody, I think they live in like near the Chicago area, and they had, and I'm in a big tech group with a bunch of nerds, and I said, turn on Wi-Fi calling. And someone in the Chicago area is like, well, I did that. It didn't work. So poo on you, Justin. And I was like, first off, like, I'm trying to be helpful. Stop being a keyboard warrior. And secondly, I'm just going to copy and paste what the article said from the spokesperson at AT&T, who clearly knows more than I do about the situation.
Yep.
Hilariously, though, this is what it's got me thinking about. The first time I ever got quoted in an article was in the Wall Street Journal when the iPhone first came out, and it was about how Apple had like tied the iPhone to AT&T. Because if you remember when it first came out, it was only singular, which then became AT&T. And I got quoted in this article about like, you know, something along the lines of like, I'm sure somewhere along the line that they're not going to have this agreement anymore, but like you play in the sandbox, whatever. And I remember telling everybody I was in the Wall Street Journal. And then my mother-in-law said something about, my mother-in-law is really funny about the things. She'll just pull random facts out. She'd be like, so-and-so got in the New York Times for their wedding. And I was like, I don't care. I was in the Wall Street Journal. Like,
Your computer should work for you, not you for the computer. GoZinto Mobius connects ConnectWise Manage to QuickBooks Online to generate invoices and update Manage with payment status. GoZinto Text allows you to communicate via text message from right inside ConnectWise Manage, speeding up time to resolution. GoZinto Payments makes invoice payments simple and easy for you and for your client. GoZinto connects your systems together to make sure you enter data once and it goes into all the systems that it should. Find out more at atmsp.link/GoZinto.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the All Things MSP podcast. I'm your host, Justin Esker. With me always is my good friend and merch wearing podcast producer. Now you pulled the wrong side.
I know. The reverse video thing.
Mr. Eric Anthony. Eric, what's up, buddy?
Having a great day here in wonderfully rainy North Carolina.
Yeah, it's not that great up here either. And check this out. We have a guest today. I love it when we have a guest. Joel, where are you? There he is. Mr. Joel Abramson from Produce 8 or Produce 8, depending on what dialect you want to use. Joel, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. Nice to be with you guys today.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Why don't you give everybody like a little bit about yourself and tell us what Produce 8 is in basically a tweet.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I've been in the MSP industry my whole career. One of the guys that built fully managed the large Canadian MSP up here in Canada that transacted to TELUS in 2022 with about 500 employees. And also been lucky enough to be alongside two partners, Chris Day, who is the original founder of IT Glue, and Mark Scott, the original founder of Enable, through most of my career. So together, we're the co-founders of Produce 8, which we'll talk about today, and also Top Down Ventures, which supports a number of MSP software companies throughout the ecosystem, like ScalePad, Quoter, Backup Radar, Control Map, et cetera, et cetera.
Just dropping a little names there just to kick us off. It's not a...
You know what? I like to root things in facts. And you asked about Produce 8, the tweet. So let's go with personal coach for the digital workday. And
personal coach for the digital workday. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in coaches. So tell us, now we can go a little further into it. Let's expand on what that is. What is Produce 8? Who is it for? And what's the ultimate goal of using it?
Yeah, well, if you had to bucket it into a software category, it would be this emerging software category called work analytics. And for MSPs, what it starts to do is just visualize your workday and start to hone in on areas for you to make improvements. So like if we look at how we're going to recover 90 persons per day, 90 minutes per person per day, every day in an MSP due to the various inefficiencies, which we can build up here in a second. That's what Produce 8 will do. It will enable you to see those inefficiencies and put in programs to work against them. So whether it's meeting overload, collaboration overload, just a leaky time of leaky bag of productivity time, that's what it does.
So basically your app, your program, your software tells everyone to get off of Teams and Slacks and Slack and get to work.
You know, there is a lot of time that's just spent talking about work, figuring out, you know, communicating about work. There's actually not that much time left over in the day to actually work.
Yeah.
And it's a super interesting problem that plagues not only MSPs, all knowledge workers, but we're focusing in on solving this for MSPs first, because we know that it's what's causing ticket rates to decline. It's what's causing billable rates to decline. It's what's causing a lot of inefficiency that's creeping into MSPs and really affecting productivity at large.
It's funny because my wife works for a pretty large Fortune 100, and she spent the days that when she's home, she's literally on calls from 8:30 in the morning till 5 o'clock at night. And I was like, what'd you do today? And she's like, nothing. I have to go do all of my work and deal with all of my email now because I've been on calls talking about work all day. And I was like, This is it's such a weird concept. And I'm starting to see that leak into our world. Do you think that a lot of this is because of the pandemic, that like now that everybody's working from home and like the way things have changed, are we seeing a big uptick in a lack of productivity due to the talking about work thing that we just mentioned because of that?
Yeah, so it was accelerated through the pandemic, but our journey started pre-pandemic when we were studying this whole notion that productivity was on the rise for knowledge workers throughout the 20th and 21st century, and then peaked in 2008 and then held at that level. And so I was at this University of Berkeley PhD speaker who was talking about productivity, and she explained this to me. And this was in 2018. And I was fascinated by it because I'd spent my whole career providing tools and technology and platforms for people to do work better, more efficiently, whether it was a visual animation studio or just a knowledge worker using cloud office productivity tools. And so, you know, the last 10 or 11 years of my career, I haven't been making people more productive. That doesn't sound right, doesn't feel right, but that's what the data showed. And so pre-pandemic, a lot of the talk track was around open office concepts. It was around the onset of the iPhone. It was, you know, a lot of this, it wasn't to do with going home and working. But then the pandemic hit and we were already starting to try to, you know, solve for this or understand it. And then productivity actually started to decline. And the intersection of productivity declining, people were actually working more and they were burnt out at record level. So I'm going, so now productivity is actually going down. I was worried about it plateauing. Now it's going the other way, but people are working more hours. What's going on here? And so that was what we started to solve prior to that, but it was accelerated beyond that. And so,
So where are you seeing some of these inefficiencies?
Oh, great question. Love this question because we spent, it's got to be tens of thousands of hours trying to understand this now. And again, starting with MSPs, but understanding this problem for all knowledge workers. So we bucket it into four areas. And the first is that our work technology is actually designed to distract us. And so if I said to you that, you know, the applications on your phone are engineered to maintain maintain your attention or get your attention back, there'd be no debate. You'd say, yes, Joel, like, absolutely. I know that Twitter and its infinite scroll or Facebook sending me notifications, it's all designed to bring me into those applications.
Right.
But our work tech actually has a lot of those same DNA factors now designed into it. We just don't really think about it. The app mentions I forgot to turn off my Slack. I bet you'll hear a knock as I get pinged on one of my various Slack channels here. All of our business tools are trying to draw us back in. Now we're working in those tools, so there's a certain amount of time that we are hoping to spend in those tools to get work done. But the reality is they're all pulling for our attention, which is causing a layer of distraction on top of us. And then we're definitely over collaborating. So this is really a result to me of the remote work, that there's been this massive increase in meeting time. And so if you think about what it would have taken to have a meeting when you were back in the office, get people in a room, focus in on that subject and an agenda that you were actually tackling versus now, like the pulling everybody into a Zoom meeting, there is just a lot of meeting overhead now that's as a result of remote work. You talked about your wife there, Justin, but like we're seeing that at least 50% of a person's time is being spent in meetings in a week. It's nuts. And then you think about task switching. So again, if you there's hard facts here around the productivity time that you lose just switching between tools and tasks and the refocus time. And not when you're in a workflow of, you're a service desk technician and you're going from, your RMM tool to your PSA to your documentation tool. That's a workflow. It's different than working on something and then being pulled into another direction from somebody who's just has no kind of barriers on accessing you and your attention and then switching back out of that. That there's a cost to refocus. And that's, a leaky bag of time. And then the last one is interesting. It's actually when you're burnt out and your wellness level is down, you're losing 20% of your workday just because you're burnt out. And so all these things are contributing to higher burnout, which is then contributing back to inefficient time. So we just think that we know that there is a lot of productivity loss. And it's not just about putting hours back into the business. It's actually just about people's general well-being as workers. And so we want to try and start to give them some of that back, first through awareness, just like if you're trying to eat better, just write down what you eat. Like, just the very act of doing that, you'll start to understand what's going on and make micro better decisions, and then actually putting in goals and challenges and all sorts of fun stuff that our product does.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack there. So I'm going to start and see if I could do it from the beginning. So number one is, I'm shocked that you use the knock-knock noise in Slack and you don't have it set to hummus, which by far is the funniest thing you can possibly do if you have Slack. If you don't know, it's in there. The second thing is the meeting overload thing. Like, that is a major problem, especially, like, my team is all over the place. I have people in Missouri, Iowa, Boston, Texas, whatever. And we've now gotten accustomed to, albeit not a great methodology of, like, we're Slacking with one another, but, like, the conflict, it's too much to type. / Zoom, join me. And it just opens a Zoom, and then all of a sudden we're in a meeting. And, yeah. Like, this past week, as an example, I've been on with one of my team members because we're building out a new function within our Halo. We were on Zoom for, like, 5 hours. Like, trying to collaborate, but, like, it was interrupted with, like, me going to the bathroom, him getting a cup of coffee, my dog barked, me remembering a really funny TikTok. And, like, we're trying to emulate that in-person work over Zoom, and it's just draining. Like, I love doing this show, but I always tell my staff, like, do not book me for the after-show time slot, because with the lights on and being on, like, I'm just drained, and then I'm not going to be able to give you the most efficient, most productive answers, right? Excuse me. So I feel like there's a lot there.
Yeah. Can I just, so it's not all meetings are bad. Like, meetings are, you know, they're part of the problem, but there's a lot of great work that comes out of collaboration and meeting time. It's just having a poorly designed meeting structure or hierarchy, or having too many of those ad hoc meetings, or just meetings with too many people. Those are, like, some real challenges that, and we're doing a bunch of educational content around this to try and just help MSPs understand what a good meeting structure should look like for your organization, whether you're 10 people, 20 people, or 200 people. There's really good content that we're producing to help guide this. And so, again, the product creates awareness, it creates accountability, but there's actually initiatives that need to be run inside of each organization to help combat these real problems.
One of the things that and this was a couple of months back that this happened, was I was working with my business coach, and I was complaining about the lack of time, the lack of getting anything done, and how many meetings I had. And she just straight up asked me, she goes, how are people booking time with you? And I was like, oh, I just give them my Calendly. And she goes, just stop. And I did. And it was like the most innocuously stupid thing. I should have realized this. I'm a smart person. But, like, no, I had to have someone, like, literally hit me in the head with a mallet and be like, just stop giving out your Calendly for the ones who are not important. Because obviously, like you said, good meetings are good meetings, right?
Yeah.
I'll take a meeting with Eric or the CEO of a company. But, like, I don't need to give my Calendly to everyone. And, like, my day got so much better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what I've done is I've actually taken Calendly and put a lot of rules around it, right? Like, nobody can book a meeting with me same day. You know, they can only book certain hours of the day because those are the ones I set aside for that type of work. And I protect certain areas of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you sound like a level 10 productivity ninja to me versus kind of the rest of the world who doesn't, first of all, probably doesn't even have Calendly. Secondly, certainly doesn't have rules around it. And that's
wait, if Eric's a level 10, what are you?
Me?
Yeah.
Maybe
it's like 10. I want to know where on the scale, because you can be a level 10, but it's out of 10 million. That's not that good.
I just invented the scale right now, so I'm gonna have to circle back with you on that.
Yeah, and I think there's a fine line between ninja and nerd, and I think I kind of fall on the nerd.
They both start with N. It's fine.
But let me ask you a question, Eric. Do you guys have any personal policies that you follow around your use of collaboration tools like Slack or Teams?
So that I do not.
Okay.
In terms of what? Because, like, we use Slack internally at our MSP.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? What do you mean by, like, the rules around it?
Do you have any policies at all? First of all,
the only policy I have, and it's an unwritten one, is if I send you a DM at 8 o'clock at night, I do not want you to reply to me. I am doing it so I can get it out of my head, and I am not expecting a reply. It's my way of like having a shower thought and getting it out there so I don't forget it.
Okay.
That's the only rule we have.
But if you're a 22-year-old technician that just started out, is the message that you're sending, I have a policy, I'm trying to get it out, but you look a little bit better if you respond to me?
And I get that because I do have people that are of that age on my team, and I have made it very, very clear.
Yeah.
Do not reply. And if you do reply to me, I will write back to you going, go to bed. Like, or something like that. Like, I will tell people, do not respond to me. It's an unwritten rule. It's an unwritten rule. That's the big problem.
So, not a policy. And therefore, again, it's just, we're not trying to write the rules around collaboration interaction. We're just saying, as an organization, it's actually up to you to take accountability on those policies and on those the use of those products. And if you were to look at your team, and maybe they don't respond to you at 8 p.m., but maybe they're reaching out to the most senior tech on the team because they're trying to work through a problem the day, and that most senior tech is responding to them. And there's a bunch of work happening in that time that you're unaware of, that as you now start to share data on a team, and again, what makes Produce 8 different, we can talk about that. We can talk about the privacy element and that it's not a monitoring tool, that it's actually all opt-in. There's lots of fun stuff we can get to. But the reality is, if you guys have decided as a team, whether that's your service team or your whole organization, to share how you work, you'll start to see some of that stuff happen. And then you'll realize why different folks are burnt out, because they're working at 10, 11, 12 at night, and you have no visibility into that. Or they're bugging somebody at that time that doesn't make it as clear that you as you do that it's not acceptable to have those conversations at that time.
Yeah, I never even thought. See, now you blew my mind because I never even thought about that. Like, I highly doubt anyone on my team is working that late, but like, you never know. You know what? I'm biting myself. I'm shooting myself in the foot because last night I was talking. I said earlier that I was talking, working with one of my guys because we're rebuilding some stuff in our PSA tool, and I was finding some stuff, and I think it must have been 7:30 at night, and I was sending a message and he was replying, and I didn't even stop myself to say, hey, don't answer me, because he was so jazzed about what he was working on. I wanted to kind of just ride the wave, but you make a solid point here, being like, I have no idea what's happening that I can't see, because you know, in Slack DMs are private on purpose. Even as the workspace owner, I can't really see what's happening there. All right, so let's talk about Produce 8. Like, how does it, like, what's its integration? Like, how's it working with the team? And what should someone who's using the product, I guess the owner of the company, be looking for for the red flags, I guess?
For sure. So we built the product, because we're all self-admitted nerds here. Eric, you called yourself a nerd. I'll do the same. I like to talk about how we built it. So we've been building this product for a long time. We've invested a ton of capital in it because we really thought that a platform like this in the work analytics space had to be rebuilt from the ground up, with the ability to integrate not just across the desktop. So we have an agent-based application that can intake everything that's going on a desktop. But then also have direct integrations to things like ConnectWise, to things like the Microsoft 365 stack and Slack and Zoom. So you can pull in a different layer of data that's available. And so there's products on the market that, first of all, they build it so you can silently deploy. So it's they're based in monitoring tools, and then they've repivoted to productivity tool or work analytics. We're built up as a work analytics productivity tool, which allows all of that data sharing to be controlled at the user level. So we're not actually rolling this out and saying, oh, how much time are people spending on YouTube? Because that doesn't matter. Like, in this day and age, you can have YouTube on your phone or your iPad. Like, it really doesn't matter what's happening from a policing standpoint. And if you have regulatory requirements or you need to be seeing all that stuff, then use those products that are built for that. What we're doing is we're saying, as an individual or as a team or as an organization, let's focus on the work applications. And let's understand what's happening in that ecosystem. And let's start by just giving the user awareness And so we've made it really end user friendly. So there's a mobile app and it acts just like a fitness app. And you understand a bunch of scores and what you're doing each day. And you know, sentiment, did I have a good day or a bad day? And you can start to see patterns in your work. So it's just, again, that awareness thing that is the first and foremost. And then you start to set goals. You say, you know what, I've spent 20 hours a week in meetings in Zoom for the last 3 weeks. I'd like to get that down to 15. It means I'm going to have to make active decisions to say, you know what, I don't really think I'm a valuable contributor at that meeting, but I'm going to put a boundary there and say I shouldn't be there, put my hand up so I can get some time back to work. And that's great. And then you roll it up and you have top-down initiatives as well. So you can say as an organization, this is how much time my organization spends in meetings. So that data is anonymized and aggregated up. And we actually put a cost on it. And we can, you can say, holy cow, we're spending $12,000 a week in meetings. Yeah. And then you say, how about we try and get that down 10%? You know, then you roll, you push, you have the conversations, you look at your meeting manifesto, you start to, you know, educate yourself around meeting structure, and then you make that change. And all of a sudden you save $5,000 a month in meeting time based on how much you're paying your people and where they're spending their time. Awesome. That's one initiative, right? And so you've made that positive impact to your organization. You've given the users or the individuals kind of a forum to talk about where their time is going and how they're spending their time. And so it's really doing, you know, it's coming at it from both directions, which we feel is super powerful for the employer-employee relationship. So it's not about making your people more productive. That's a byproduct of creating awareness around where all your time is going.
This all sounds amazingly awesome. I'm shocked that this, your name and this product doesn't come across my desk beforehand, and I really dig it. We only have a couple minutes left here. Joe, how much does something like this cost? Because it's got to be a couple $1,000s a month for organizations, right?
When you look at, I just gave you one example where it would pay for the subscription for the year by that one initiative, right?
Sure. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Right now it's $18 a user per month. We're doing some really cool stuff with AI, so we'll be able to roll out some really fun stuff here in the coming year. We've got a really great partner program that's in the works, so you can actually pay for your subscription by selling it to two customers and then generating revenue on top of that. So what we, you know, our macro trend there is that we know MSPs, like, God, I've run an MSP for a long, long time. Like, there are certain revenue streams that are starting to dry up based on different services that we provide our customers. And we really wanted to bring a product to market that was a different conversation than, here's another cybersecurity product. And so this is around productivity. It's around helping MSPs look at the biggest cost that all of their customers have, which is labor, and making some positive impact toward it and monetizing it back for themselves. So we're excited to help transform MSPs to future work experts, starting with productivity.
And at $18 a month per user, I mean, that is nothing for your productivity. I think honestly, just hearing you talk about this, I think it totally makes sense for people to get in on this. Where can people find out more information about the product and you?
Yeah, come to produce8.com, come to topdown.com and check out the, you know, the broader vision. We're really active on socials and coming up with live webinars and all sorts of fun stuff. So we're super excited to engage with the community at scale. We've got 34 employees now. We'll be at a bunch of shows coming up. I'm always around and I'll be down, at a few shows, hanging around the ScalePad booth, hanging around the Produce 8 booth. So
you probably have the most efficient 30 employees in the entire world.
You know what? They're a dialed group, and we're very, very aware of where our time goes.
So. Joel, thanks so much for being here, man. This product sounds awesome. So go out, check it out, produce8.com. For everyone else who's listening, check us out, facebook.com/group/allthingsMSP. Don't forget to join us on YouTube, youtube.com/@allthingsMSP. Watch Eric and I make funny faces at one another while Joel explains how efficiency works and how we should really be better at doing things. I'm honestly going to delete Slack from my phone by the end of this, episode. Go check out atmsp.link/podcast and all the other episodes. Subscribe to all, I'm losing it here, Eric. Subscribe on all your other podcasts. We have merch. We have a bunch of stuff. You know what? Just go to the Facebook group and just ask there.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that Produce 8 is one of our newest sponsors here on All Things MSP. So you will be seeing things in the Facebook group. We're going to be doing a webinar soon. So Joel, thank you very much for your sponsorship and your support. And we look forward to creating some more content over the next several months.
Love
it. That's it, man. That's awesome. Thanks so much, Joel. That's Eric. I'm Justin. That's it. Bye.
Are you looking for a unified communications partner that can handle the telecom needs of your clients without the fear of them stealing those clients? Comtech is a UCaaS partner that specializes in Teams voice integration, but they also handle legacy equipment like alarm systems and elevator phones. Best of all, they have local techs to do the work. Partner with Comtech today and enjoy increased passive revenue, an annual bonus program, spiffs, and a 98.7% renewal rate. Find out more at atmsp.link/Comtech. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. You can also follow us on Facebook, but better yet, go ahead and join the Facebook group. You can also follow us on Instagram if that's your thing. And make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at All Things MSP to catch us in all of our video glory. And last but certainly not least, if LinkedIn is your thing, you can follow us there as well. And a special thank you to our premier sponsors, SuperOps, MoveBot, Gozinta, EasyDMark, and Comtech. And we also want to thank our vendor sponsors. The All Things MSP podcast is a BizPow LLC production.